Welcome to Green and Red, scrappy politics for scrappy people, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
Welcome to the Silky Smooth Sounds of the Green and Red podcast. I'm your co-host, Scott Parkin, in Berkeley, California today. And Bob is off on assignment, but we'll be back soon. But joining me today is our old friend and comrade, Jody Evans. I've been friends with you like something like 20, 25 years, something like that. Yeah. Jody is the co-founder of Code Pink. We've had Jody on the show multiple times before, but there's a lot going on in the world that we can talk about with Jody, and that we're gonna talk about that. And some of it's around war and peace, and some of it's around climate. And I just want to say welcome to Green and Red again, Jody.
Thanks, Scott. I love being on Green and Red.
Yeah, we love having you on. So maybe we're recording this after sort of big news has broken about the assassination of Charlie Kirk, a right-wing activist and activist, whatever he was, Charlie Kirk. But just like a day or two before that, Code Pink had actually disrupted a dinner in D.C., which included Trump and Pete Hegseth and Marco Rubio and J.D. Vance. I was at some fancy schmancy restaurant in Washington, D.C., but Code Pink folks were able to mobilize and disrupt them at their dinner. Could you actually talk about that a little bit? Just tell us a little bit about what happened and what the response has been.
Sure. Well, Code Pink, our mission is to shine a light and scratch at power that is, violent, driving war. And what we're, with the Trump administration, it's war on everyone. It's war on the planet. It's war on the people. It's war around the world. And you've got to, I just want everyone to get the sense of what Olivia and team were feeling with the National Guard in the city of D.C. So it literally feels like a war on the people and the city of D.C. And, word got out that he was going to be there for dinner. So Olivia had reservations, and they were at dinner at the same restaurant when Trump and cabinet arrived. And they prepared, what did they want to say? We know from years of doing this, you have to be very succinct and repeat it over and over again. And so they came up with their chant. Ending, get out of DC, out of Palestine. And Trump was the Hitler of our time, that chant. And to get as present and with as much visual as they could and leave when asked to leave, so there's no law being violated. And they were successful. And this was Trump and cabinet's first time out for dinner since he entered the White House this time. So it was a big event that he was even going out. The street was full of Secret Service. But I want to say that Olivia also disrupted Biden at dinner around Palestine and also disrupted Obama at dinner around Palestine in DC. So she's our, stellar bird dogger. She teaches everyone how to bird dog. But accountability is essential to the work that we do, is, holding people accountable. We know that the cameras and the story, people who write the stories are not going to talk about peace. And they're certainly not going to take the pants down of the people who are driving these wars. So at Code Pink, we always know we have to get in front of the camera. We have to be the story to tell the story. Back during Bush's time, Condi Rice was testifying at a hearing about getting more weapons, and Desiree, who was a librarian in DC, as she entered the room to sit down in the hearing room, held up her red hands that had been painted red and said, "You have the blood of the Iraqi on your hands." Mm-hmm. And that went globally, because what you're able to say is what no one will say, but everybody wants to say. And right. That's what Olivia was striving to do, to say, it's like you're using your voice in the space of all the people that want their voices heard. And so that's why she felt those things were so important, out of DC, out of Palestine. And I think that's why it's gone viral globally and is now a meme, is that it's that thing that kind of broke through the silence.
And what was the response for her or the team immediately when it happened? Did they just push them out?
Yeah, they asked them to leave and they left. They hadn't violated any laws. They hadn't done anything wrong. And they were just using their freedom of speech.
Which he wants to do away with. Which that's one of the things he wants to go away.
Yeah.
And with the assassination of Charlie Kirk the last couple of days, and excuse me, in the last day, and then it seems like it's been longer. And then last night, Trump gave a video speech about coming after the people who were responsible for this. Have you all been getting a lot of threats and you know, are the feds been looking at you or that you know of, you know?
Oh, well, we're under that. We have the bullseye on our back every day. Right. We're not their favorite people because we are so effective at calling them out and fearless, you know, in the face of everything that gets thrown at us, lawsuits, you know, investigations by Congress. We've got it all already. The only thing that could happen here is the United States State Department show up at Olivia's house. And that hasn't happened. And she's ready. She knows her rights and how to, you know, receive them. At Code Pink, our inbox is full of a lot of hate and vitriol, but that's kind of normal. It's just a little escalated in the last day or two. You know, I look at patterns. When I watch things happen, I look at patterns and how something feels organically responded to and how something looks really, you know, manufactured. I've never seen anything so manufactured as this assassination of Charlie Kirk. And by the way, my niece is a teacher at that school and was in the school where it happened. So like I have also like my family engaged in fear of like the school shut down. So we were all like on high alert about my niece. Only to find out this was happening. The response by Bibi before anybody even knew, and you know, the call out of the White House that this is to go after leftists, we have no idea, you know, who did this, except that they are a freaking crazy, amazing sharpshooter. So, right. You know, this is very intentional, very planned. Not alone, because there was the diversion tactic. We've seen this with CIA and assassinations. It's just not your like homegrown assassination.
And it was someone who is very, you know, capable and probably trained, practiced in the very least with a firearm.
Yeah, very trained. But not only that, but the diversion tactic that, you know, put everybody off guard while he got away, or they got away, whoever they are.
Right.
I mean, it just reminds me of Kennedy's assassination. You know, so it's frightening, Scott. We look at pagers being blown up in people's faces, you know, the capacity to bomb in Syria, Lebanon, and, you know, now Doha.
Venezuela. Right.
The escalation of the use of weapons is frightening members of Congress, which is interesting. You know, having been in the halls of Congress for the last almost 2 years, I mean, for the last 23, but these last 2 years have been really the worst ever because the members of Congress are just... I call them zombies. After I saw Sinners, I was just like, they're just zombies. It really helped me see like what a zombie is. They look alive, but they're just zombies. And you're really, that's what you're dealing with in Congress. But all of a sudden, in the last few days, you know, they voted a majority vote to get rid of the authorization of use of force from 2002. Just a couple of days ago. That's huge. And it came from the inside. That was an inside job. That was Congress saying, what are we going to do? Like actually showing up to their job, which is, we were all shocked. So they're getting nervous. about what's happening internally and externally. And then,
well, I would think that that assassination in Minnesota a couple of months ago of the former state legislature speaker getting shot at her home,
yeah,
it probably terrified a lot of them, including the Republicans who have been you know, at least publicly terrible about it.
No, this Pandora's box has been you know, opened, and they have no idea how to shut it. I mean,
right.
Scott, I've been, you know, we've been working at trying to cut the Pentagon for as long as you've known me.
Mm-hmm.
It just gets bigger and bigger, and it's not even reported correctly. But if you take all the numbers that the United States government reports spent on war, it's $2 trillion last year. $2 trillion. And there were $24 trillion spent on the war on terror. And, you know, like 5 million people in the Middle East killed. Congress has allowed this to happen. And they're literally owned by the Zionists and the military industrial complex. And I learned when I went to cross the DMZ in Korea from north to south, and I had to do a lot of research in North Korea to figure out how we could cross. I learned a lot about Eisenhower, who came into office and learned about what was happening and just started crying and said, stop it.
Right.
I think because of that, when he left, it was beware the military congressional industrial complex. And he told Kennedy, your only job is to keep your break on the military industrial complex, for which he was probably murdered. So, that it's been unleashed. And I think you could really look at the end of the USSR. It's like at the end of the Cold War, which we thought was, you know, scary. The end of that is where this thing has just escalated. And it's quite frightening. And we know how many people it's killed, but now it's out in the open. And with the new Department of War that Hegseth is now the head of, at least it's honest, since it was never about defense. But it's quite frightening.
And your co-founder, Medea Benjamin, got arrested just the other day trying to question members of Congress about the Israeli bombing or a bombing of Hamas leadership offices in Doha and Qatar. Could you talk about that for a minute? Because there was they made some allegations about her, which were actually weren't true, correct?
Sure. As always, every day in Congress, Medea is walking around the halls and asking members of Congress the questions they won't answer for anyone, and they won't answer for her. I mean, a few days last week, a member was so afraid he broke the elevator trying to get in it. But this was Daryl Issa from San Diego. And she's walking and saying, what do you think about what happened? What do you think as a member of Congress should be the response? She's just asking questions. We're not accusing, we're not demanding. Basically, Code Pink just asks questions to help really get answers. And he wouldn't answer. And she followed him into his office, and he literally like shut the door on her. And then as she was coming in, tried to grab her phone. And then called the police saying, you know, she's violating my rights and assaulting me. And that's a felony,
mm-hmm.
what he claimed had happened. Fortunately, we always have our cameras on. So we were able to take to the Capitol Police to show the video of what actually happened, which might be more like he was more abusive to her
right.
than he should have been, including his staff. So the charges were dropped. We were super worried that Medea was going to spend her birthday in jail because this is her third arrest. And then also she would be not able to go to Congress anymore because they would do a 6-month stay away order.
Mm.
So it was more serious than just the arrest. It was really a way to squash her actually capacity to do what she does every day. And I just want to say we were just at the People's Conference on Palestine in Detroit. And everyone is so grateful for what Medea does because, you know, it's a conference of Palestinian activists, 4,000 people. And to be witnessing every day the horrors that just like tear your heart apart and to know that somebody's there scratching at power is nourishing, you know, because otherwise you're just like up against hell all day. And I would, you know, we have people that write from Gaza every day in gratitude. So that's a real thing to be able to stop that and manufacture that happening. And we're seeing a lot of manufacture. We're on so many court cases right now where we're being sued for things that are just being manufactured. They're like, they don't even make sense. But crazy stuff, like having a red triangle on one of our images, which says that we want violence. And I said, oh, I thought it was the red triangle of the Palestinian flag. Then who gets to describe what the triangle is, you know?
Right. I mean, I think of the last 2 years, and, you know, there's a lot of people who are doing a lot of things in a lot of places. And, you know, here in the Bay Area, it's marches or it's disruption at weapons manufacturers in the South Bay. But no one has really held the line on trying to hold Congress to account the way Madea and Code Pink have. I mean, I honestly think of Madea all the time. Every time I see someone getting bird dog in Congress, and sometimes you see like other orgs bird dogging members of Congress over different issues. But I feel like that's a precedent that Code Pink has really set. And especially Madea is like the leader of that.
That's why she moved there from the Bay Area. I'm going to scratch at them every day. Oh yeah. People come and we give them teach-ins about how to be in Congress. We encourage everyone to do it. You know, come on, Scott, like we've been doing this a long time and, you know, we've watched, especially you're the organizing genius. We've watched organizing change, you know, we've watched engagement change. We've watched what happened change, but I would say that collectivism has had a really damaging effect on organizing and being engaged. And so one of the things we really are at Code Pink is we're engaged. You see us, we're public, we're visible, or, you know, it's a photograph. One of the lessons I really learned around all this was when Trump was first elected, there were 200 million emails sent through all the collectivism to try to stop the education secretary, and it didn't stop. But there were 5,000 people that flooded the halls of Congress to keep Obamacare. And they were all people like in wheelchairs, and that worked. And so being in the halls of Congress works. So whenever anybody wants to come on any issue, we're happy to teach, happy to, you know, encourage. People need the courage, you know, like to see that it's their right. People come in like, can you really do that? Can you really do that? And I was like, that is your right. This is your house. They work for you. And really flipping that around, because one of the things, Scott, that just breaks my heart is that instead people like, oh, vote for somebody and raise money for somebody so that they can buy votes by lying to other people. And instead of like, let's deal with the issue, let's be engaged on the issue. And I've watched too many people give their power over to members of Congress instead of like, I am the power. People mm-hmm. are the power. And we work really, really hard to get people back in the place where Dee and I started, which was people power right. in the late 60s and early 70s and through the 70s, where so many laws were changed. But first we had to upset power. And, you know, you upset, you know, corporations all the time. You scratch at them and make them really nervous until they behave correctly.
Or they put restraining orders on us.
Exactly. The war economy is getting smarter and smarter and less worried about activists these days. It's just the gloves are off and they're just running. We're in a very sad time where the capacity to throw rocks in the way, the rocks don't seem to bother them anymore. They are so psychopathic that there's, you know, throwing things in their way and trying to appeal to some humanity, or at least some pretense of humanity, is gone away.
I mean, I actually don't think there's much of a difference between the two parties. I think there's a handful of people in the Democratic Party who are still good politicians, and the like Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar
actually in the party. So I want to make this clear.
Yeah, exactly.
The people in Congress represent, first of all, the empire. They put their hand on the Bible and swear to, you know, serve the empire. And they work for the military industrial complex and Zionism. People like Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, they work for the people and they know it. They don't work for the party. They're not a part of the party. They work for their constituents. It's why AIPAC can't unseat them, because, you know, it's like Madomi. It's like, it's when you work for the people and deliver for the people and speak for the people, it's very different and you can see it. And it's very sad to see how few members were actually gotten there from the movements. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I caution people, we don't live in a democracy, because you can't have a democracy in this much inequality, the most inequality that ever existed in history. And you can't have a democracy when the rich own the communication tools. Our media lies to us every day. And so when campaigns happen from the grassroots with people talking to people, like in New York City mayor's race, mm-hmm. it's a power that they are freaked out about, you know, freaked out about. That's power. There's only a few of them, and there's a lot of us.
Yeah, it's true.
You are listening to the Silky Smooth Sounds of the Green and Red podcast. Please check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you're watching this on YouTube, please hit that subscribe button. And if you're listening to us on your favorite audio platform, please give us a rate and review. It helps us with the algorithms. And if you really like what you're hearing, please go to our Patreon, patreon.com/greenredpodcast, and become a patron, or make a one-time donation by going to our website at greenandredpodcast.org and hitting that support button.
Sadly, we've moved into this era where people feel like they're organized because they get put on the list and then they like click, maybe they make a phone call. But when we actually organize people, and not just to, like, I'm good with big weekend marches and things like that, but when we organize people to go to a congressional office or go to a corporate suite or something like that, that's when they really start to pay attention, and when they get scared, they're putting up more defenses around that all the time. But still, that's still how, like, they just, like, if we go and disrupt town hall meetings, which I see a lot of, they just stop having the town hall meetings, and then we have to figure out other ways to, like, get at them.
Yeah, well, we've been
going non-violently, not
going to their houses and leaving messages. No, you can't be supporting a genocide and think you're going to get off scot-free without hearing from constituents. And yes, Rashida was saying in Detroit that all of her colleagues are booed at their town hall meetings, that they're all disrupted. While we were like 4,000 of us rising to our feet cheering, she was feeling all the love. So it's very different when you're serving the people.
And she doesn't get booed at town hall meetings in her district.
No.
Yeah. Unlike lots of other members, both Democrat and Republican.
Matter of fact, she was in the march the next day with nothing, just walking around with her folks, you know, being loved up.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Just to kind of switch a little bit, you know, we have a climate march coming up. We have a climate week coming up. It's a, for folks who don't know, it's a United Nations annual event around climate. There's always lots of there's also lots of civil society activity that happens during climate week. And so we actually originally planned this episode just to be about climate week and the Pentagon. But maybe we could just talk a little bit, maybe to start off with a little bit, how do you see war and climate change intertwined?
Well, cool. Well, I also want to say that in the last 2 years, we've been able to have them call it Peace and Climate Justice Week, because we've been working many decades to get the climate movement to understand that war is the greatest industrial contributor to climate change. The effects of war on the climate are a list that is so long, I can't, you know, even go into it, but you can imagine. I mean, I didn't need to have facts and figures for this. I knew, I could see, and given Vietnam and given all the places that I'd been where war is, it's a devastation to the earth. And we know that from everything that's used in weaponry. So we have our campaign, it's called War Is Not Green. And I've been working ever since pre the invasion of Iraq, we would have marches. And I would see all my friends that worked on the climate not coming to our marches. And I was like, but they're the same. Mm-hmm. Michael Kieschnick did actually do a wing of a march once, which was called the Climate Movement for Peace, which I really appreciated. But it's a struggle, which I understand because everybody's really working hard on their issue. But, you know, all we're saying is just like, when, you know, if we're allies, that, you know, just like us, we show up climate events. When there's an event around ending war, it would be really essential for the climate movement to show up, because the funding of the climate movement is in the trillions of dollars, all the organizations, and it's, you know, 200 million activists if you count up all the activists. So the peace, there is nothing in philanthropy about funding peace. Like, it doesn't exist on the list of anything philanthropic, and when you figure it out, it's like 0.0000001%. So here we are, this tiny movement trying to stop this behemoth problem. And so we've been trying to encourage the climate movement in. And we are showing up at this march, which is the 20th of September in New York City, with our giant blow up elephant from the Backbone campaign, and saying there's an elephant in the room and it's war, and we need to pull the elephant, you know, shine a light on the elephant and pay attention to the cost of war. Now, when I started this campaign, it wasn't as horrific as it is now, but, you know, look what has happened to amazing spaces of rich and ancient agriculture, starting in Iraq. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the birthplace of civilization. This is the verdant, you know, agricultural, you know, beautiful land between the Tigris and the Euphrates, a desert. Mm-hmm. This is Gaza, everything destroyed. I mean, look what's happening in all of Palestine, like 1,000-year-old trees. It's horrific. But Ukraine, an unnecessary war that was driven by the United States and NATO, an unnecessary war. Palestine, Syria, what happened to Libya? I mean, it's just devastating. And it's not just what happens. First of all, it's the number one user of fossil fuels of anything in the United States, number one, on top of everything. Yeah. The numbers of what those planes take is crazy. And also the flying back and forth and 800 bases, the amount of money and waste and degradation, because it's not just what the weapons do. It's, you know, think of Hawaii and, you know, what the weapons were doing and what was happening on bases, the PFAS that live forever chemicals that are in all the bases that are in the neighborhoods where the bases are. It's a long, horrible list of damage, of just damage. And it, even like when you're watching what's happening, when the bombs hit this building, you know, like, let's just look at Doha. Mm-hmm. That is what flies into the environment, what flies into the city. Think of that, you know, in Gaza on steroids, the amount of toxic waste that is in now the air. So we've got the massive pollution, we've got the destruction of ecosystems, you know, whole environmental terrain's gone. Not to mention in Ukraine, they're putting in unexploded ordnances, you know, that last for 80 years. I think there's still some out there. Something that was made illegal, we're still doing. The resource depletion, the amount of minerals and copper and plutonium and all the things that go into the weapons. And we know with habitat destruction, it's not just where the habitat is, but how it affects the biodiversity of the space. And then just the forever chemicals that are biological and, you know, insane.
Not to mention with Ukraine is that they use nuclear power plants as...
As what they bomb. That's what I'm saying. It's like, that's the thing they bomb.
Yeah.
I call it environmental terrorism. That falls under the environmental terrorism.
You know, we did a show with an environmental reporter back It was early on in the genocide, who was actually talking about how it was Joshua Frank, who was a counterpunch, talking about how the Israelis were purposely, this sort of environmental terrorism, how the Israelis were purposely pouring like salt water into like the
The water system,
into the water system, so that it, even if, you know, that was, now we know actually what Netanyahu's real plan is. But like back then, it was still like a possibility where we thought there might be a peace agreement, and then Palestinians would still live there. But you know, they were ceding it so that even if they did, it would be like a life of misery with no water.
But so why Coot Pink is always at these climate marches and COP is that we need the movements to come together as allies. We have a campaign where we now have over 100 organizations that are work on climate that have joined in to say, yes, when we have the opportunity, we will raise this issue. We will join you in the streets. And then right now we picked 12 of the big greens to shine a light on. And we're, I've learned from you from Rainforest Action Network my campaign skills. So we picked the Dirty Dozen, but they're not dirty. They're just we they just need they just need to be taught. It's not a bad thing, but we feel, what happened at COP in Glasgow. I had my Wars Not Green stickers and 100,000 people I'm marching with. There wasn't a person I went up to with my sticker and said, "Here, war's not green. Did you know that war was the greatest industrial contributor to climate change?" Not a person knew that. And these are all activists for the climate.
Right.
So we're
It's the
assuming,
biggest emitter in the world.
yes. So we're assuming that these 12 we picked don't know either. So we're here to teach, which is what we do at Code Pink. We educate, inspire, and activate. So we're teaching the Sierra Club. It's our first group to what we say, invite them to join the leadership in the movement for the climate that includes the cost of war. And so we've been going, we have about 60 local Code Pinks, and they're going to their local Sierra Clubs. And I have to tell you, it's been really awesome because, of course, the rank and file of the Sierra Club are super excited to learn. They've actually invited us back for teach-ins, and they want to be part of this campaign. So we're using it as an opportunity to teach across the organizations. The 12 of them, I believe their annual funding is $16 billion,
Wow.
and so that would be a lot if they pivoted in our direction. It's the Sierra Club, Center for Biological Diversity, Earth Justice, Project Drawdown, which is how we got the numbers, by the way. When Paul published the book, I'm like thumbing through them, and I'm like, where's war? And he's like, I don't know. And I'm like, it's more than all of these things. And he said, well, I guess there wasn't a study on it. And so I went to the cost of war at Brown University and asked Netta if like they could study the cost of war to the climate. And now she's a global hero for having studied it, come out with the numbers. Every country wants her. She got stolen from Brown, and now she's in England. And that no one had done this was crazy, but it was on purpose, not crazy, on purpose. And I would say there's so much that we don't know that is hidden on purpose. And this is one of the things. In COP in Paris, the United States was able to convince everyone that the war numbers would not be counted, which is, of course, because that would raise their numbers beyond anyone else's on steroids. And so they got it taken out of being looked at. And so now we have different universities looking at it, a lot of studies being done, and so a lot to support also the organizations in knowing how bad this is, what it looks like, what the cost is, and even at the simplest level, it's horrific.
Has the sort of, you talked about the Sierra Club chapters, but has the national team, have they been responsive and communicated with you?
Not
Or
yet.
are they acting like when we campaign against Bank of America or Chase or something?
Not yet. But we're working our way bottom up. People
Oh, that's good.
power. We've written them a few letters, haven't heard back. But now we're just teaching, teaching the peeps, which is what it's all about, right? It's like we all need to learn. So Yeah. And, you know, it ties into what's happening in our streets too, Scott. It's, you can't be surprised of what's happening in our streets because, and I said this at the beginning of the Iraq War, if you say the only answer is war, that's going to be the only answer in the streets of the United States. You teach people that. And so here it is, the only answer is violence and weapons and now with drones and how small they are and insidious they are. I mean, it's not just what it does to the planet, but it's also what it does to our psyche. And you know, I also realized somewhere in the Obama administration that, oh, I'm not going to end war till I end the war economy, because war just serves the war economy. There's no like defense. It's not helping you. It's just stealing all your money, 64% of it, of your tax dollars, your hard-earned tax dollars are spent for these weapons to come back and be pointed towards you. And you know, that is horrible. That is just horrible. And the amount of wealth we're seeing, those trillions of dollars, that's making the rich richer. This, you know, wars have always, you know, war is a racket, as General Smith said. You know, it's like, it's about money. It's about lies and money.
The episode, which we actually just put up yesterday, which is the one we recorded 2 days ago, was it was about the theme was around the changing of the name of the Department of Defense to the Department of War. And that's what Bob is actually a historian, and that's his field. And so actually the creation of the permanent military wartime, the permanent wartime economy is what sort of just driven all of this. Right. And Trump doesn't, honestly, Trump and Hegseth don't seem to understand that because they're not super bright. But it's the one of the centerpieces of our economy. And that's what needs to shift.
Yeah, because, well, the whole economy is a war economy. I mean, capitalism is a war economy. It's extractive, destructive, and oppressive. And of course, war that keeps it in place is like the mot, you know, the poster child for it. But at our other campaign, Include Pink, China is not our enemy, which I started because the US wants to go to war on China. And I was like, what? That's crazy. I just saw a bunch of lies and I said, this is Iraq all over again. Really, the United States doesn't want to go to war on China. And of course, a few years later, it looks like, yes, they do want to go to war on China. And Hegseth really wants to go to war on China. So we're sending out our alert this week to teach him from the Art of War, Sun Tzu's Art of War, about the true warrior never goes to war, so that he can learn what you know real warriorship looks like from a Chinese perspective, and also to listen to the words of Qi at the end of the celebration of the 80th anniversary of the end of the global war to end fascism, where he said, you know, we fall together, we rise together, and we've got to all learn to get along and work for the betterment of all people. So the difference between Hegseth and Qi is pretty extreme.
It's a pretty big gap.
So yeah, we're gonna send him a book with all the signatures of people, hoping that he'll suggesting that he read it.
I have one other question, kind of getting towards the end of the time here. Just as I've been an organizer in the climate movement for a long time, and I was been involved with anti-war stuff a long time before that. Because I also saw this like lack of intersectional sort of lack of connection between climate folks and people doing anti-war stuff or Palestine solidarity stuff. And in the last 2 years, I mean, it's been 2 years now since October 2023. My question is, how much are you seeing? I've actually been seeing around a lot of anti-genocide organizing, a lot more climate people involved with that, which I think is a good step. And I'm wondering how much of that you've been seeing. I just see that anecdotally here in the Bay Area, but I'm wondering how much of that you've been seeing.
Well, you know, Scott, I think every city has its culture. And you know, you live in a culture of activism that is understands being allies, I think, a lot better than some cities. I haven't seen it in New York. I haven't seen it in DC, and I really haven't seen it in LA. Of course, there's always people like you in the climate movement. you know, that understands this and is always there. I mean, you've always been by my side in all these marches. I mean, hello, we we closed down board meetings of Halliburton, and I'll never forget that amazing action. But
Disrupted Jamie Dimon's talk at UCLA.
Oh, together. That was very fun. Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's just the culture of where you live. You live in a much more interconnected culture where people show up for each other, and where the culture in Oakland understands that it's all connected. We're trying to get that across. It's not just war. It's not the climate. It's that the guns pointed at you in your streets. You know, it's what's happening when we're trying to stop a pipeline. That militarism we funded with our tax dollar that's stopping us. So the whole picture, the picture of oppression and violence and imperialism, it's all in these pieces. And that, you know, I think that Oakland activists understand that much more than maybe other activists across the country. Except, you know, in smaller places like in Reno or in San Pedro, I find in smaller places, yes, the movements are more connected because they're smaller and they have to be, and they're members of everything, and they're out there to be, you know, a force against imperialism, however that looks.
Not much tighter communities.
Yes.
Yeah,
because it's all really the war economy. It's imperialism and the war economy that we need to stop, and we need to stop participating in. And so, you know, that message is getting fed through and in the feeding through in some of those smaller communities. I find much more engaged activism for just whatever's up.
I'm going to leave it there. One last question. I do have one last question, which is, do you want to tell the audience where they can check out about Code Pink? I mean, it's pretty out there, but just as a final blurb, if you will.
You can learn more about the cost of war to the planet at codepink.org/wing, which is War is Not Green. And we have a lot of resources for you there to learn. And also, if you're a teacher, if you want to share in your class, we have around every war, about Ukraine, around Palestine. We're going to be doing a summit on the 18th, right before the march. And we will have lots of great speakers who from different organizations are working on this in refined ways, including an amazing speaker who's working on the cost of war to Palestine. And our keynote ending speaker is Stephen Donziger, and Katie Halper will be hosting the conversation. So it will be available on Zoom or in New York City at the People's Forum on the 18th. You can find all of that at codepink.org/events. And we hope you, if you're in the New York area or surrounds, that you'll join us in the streets in New York on the 20th.
That sounds great. And we can put all of those links into our show notes too. Folks, we've been talking with Jody Evans, co-founder of Code Pink. If you like what you're hearing, please check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. If you're listening to this on audio platform, give us a rate and review. And if you really like us, go to greenandredpodcast.org, hit the support button, or become a patron at patreon.com/greenandredpodcast. Jody, it was great talking with you. It's always great to talk with you.
I miss you.
And
I'll see you at the celebration next month.
Yeah, see you. It's a month away already. Folks, we'll tell you about that sometime soon. Rainforest Action Network's 40th birthday is coming up. So, and
lots everyone to celebrate.
Yeah, lots to celebrate, especially even in these dark times. Yeah. Folks, everybody else, all of y'all out there, make trouble and misbehave. We'll talk to you again soon.